This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the message?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles. Grateful to have you along with us. And if you are watching or listening to this on iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube, wherever you may be downloading it, highly recommend to hit the subscribe button so you never miss any Mile High Tick. And of course, make sure you have dialed into your calendar to be at Mile High August 20th to 23rd, 2020. We look forward to seeing you there. All the details are at milehighchiroregistration.com. We look forward to seeing you rise up with us. Today, I am thrilled to have our guest, who I think very highly of in the chiropractic circles. He's made incredible contributions to chiropractic and research. Dr. Deed Harrison is the director and owner of Ideal Spine Health Center. He graduated from Life West Chiropractic College in 96. We have that in common because I graduated from Sherman in 96. He's a world-renowned chiropractic researcher, and educator, and clinician. He has authored over 100 peer-reviewed spine research papers, which really is a bar that all of us should aspire to. For a spine textbook and has presented numerous times. He presented at Mile High last year, which we were just delighted to have him there. He's the chair of the PCCRP radiographic guidelines and president of chiropractic biophysics and techniques and seminars in the CBP nonprofit. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Deed.
Hey, you're extremely welcome, and I'm honored to be back again. And super sorry everybody had to hear that mouthful of my life's work.
Well, you know, here's the thing to say about your life work, which is a great question to ask, because your life's work speaks to it. How vital do you feel subluxation and the adjustment are to this, be to the central of chiropractic?
Yeah, I think it's huge. I mean, it's number one, it's our historical tenet. It's our platform. It's our foundation of what we do. So vertebral subluxation and correction of vertebral subluxation is at the core of what we do. The issue is, you know, defining it in working language that we can all kind of, you know, accept and agree to within reasonable frameworks, and then, you know, documenting the outcomes of that correction and how that affects A, people's health and well-being, and B, future episodes of whatever condition we're talking about. So I personally think it's vital. It's at the core of what we do.
Yes, and this is the thing of why I also enjoy interviewing you, because I feel like there's people in chiropractic that those of us that have it at the core of what we do need to rally around that to for the future of chiropractic. And with that, also relative to your body of work, is research. How important do you think research is to the future of chiropractic?
It's huge. I mean, it's imperative from a technique perspective, but also a clinical perspective, so that we can continue to provide the type of care and the quality of care that we as doctors want to provide. If we don't lead and direct some of the research, at least have a voice in it, if we're not like quote-unquote researchers, then what happens is we're left with somebody else that doesn't have the same vision, maybe passion, maybe understanding of what a true clinician has, and you're left with, you know, spinal manipulation for back pain, spinal manipulation for headaches. And then you're left with 8 to 12 visits, because that's when people get about 40 to 45% improved. And, you know, we're left with these guidelines that we're forced to adhere to, versus if we stand up and we make our presence known and we say, hey, you know what, that's one side of what we could be doing as, you know, chiropractic clinicians and manipulation specialists, but that's really not true corrective chiropractic principles, and here's a different version and you know, different body of work. So we have to have that, otherwise our direction is going to be dictated for us by other people.
Yes, and that's what we see happening, and I'm very concerned about personally. At times, when I see what's going on in the world with chiropractic, I get very concerned. It keeps me up at night in terms of the future of chiropractic and really humanity, because it's humanity that we do all this for, not chiropractic per se, but the people that we help, for sure. Now, and with that, let's dive a little bit more, a little deeper, relative to subluxation, something I know you're familiar with, the work of neurosurgeon Alf Breck.
Yeah.
How can you describe for people how that relates to subluxation?
Well, first of all, like the Alf Breck's biomechanics of the central nervous system, you know, I started looking into that as a student. My late father and some of the CBP doctors at the time turned me onto that in the 1990s. And I was so fascinated by that. I read all three of his textbooks, and I read his, he had about 20, 21 peer-reviewed research articles. And I read those by the time I had graduated. So a lot of people don't know that he actually wrote three textbooks. He wrote one in 1960, one in 1978, and then one in 1989. And I got copies of all of them, read them cover to cover, and then tracked down the research that he did in you know, the peer-reviewed literature. And to me, it created the internal principle and passion for what I am today, the spine correction. It was the understanding of biomechanics of the central nervous system and how altered spine configurations and altered body postures can increase or decrease mechanical loads acting on the neural tissue. And then if it's sustained increased loading, it can potentially cause, you know, health consequences. And, you know, in Breg's time, he didn't have randomized trials, but he had surgical cases, and he documented the hell out of those extensively in his textbooks, and they were very well done. And so, you know, the biomechanics of it is true and correct. That's not going to change. But the application of the principles of spine correction, his work was kind of, you know, a bit archaic because of its time. But, he didn't have true randomized trials saying, hey, when I put a curve back in the spine or when I change this posture, these are the neurological improvements. He had case studies. So it basically, to answer your question, it framed my understanding, and it's what's driving me and my team of researchers to investigate the neurophysiological outcomes of spine and posture correction with randomized trials, and that's what we're doing today.
Yes, and I too think it's vital, and I think it's something that's missing in baseline chiropractic education. I think if chiropractors learn what some of his work in their basic DC program, it would vastly improve people's knowledge and make them better chiropractors.
Yeah, 100%. And the reality of it is, we're finding that the biomechanics of the central nervous system is really an important issue when we talk about sagittal plane curve correction. We're seeing it from an orthopedic and neurosurgical perspective, but we're also seeing it in the recent randomized trials that my group has done. We did a fascinating randomized trial that's been presented at a couple peer-reviewed research conferences. It's only in abstract form right now in terms of, you know, peer-reviewed. It's not in full text format yet. It will be later this year. But we showed that we can improve spinal cord velocity of the sensory system when we restore the neck curve to at least 20 degrees. And these are in asymptomatic individuals. So we're actually finding that modeling the improvement of the cervical curve after treatment and then modeling the change in spinal cord velocity under somatosensory evoked potentials, we're finding that correction of the spine in the neck predicts the improvement in the velocity of the central nervous system potential.
Yeah, and I think you said a phrase there that most people may have missed that I think is vital, which is biomechanics of the central nerve system, which was one of Breg's books, because most people think of have a course in biomechanics of the spine,
right,
which is different than biomechanics of the central nerve system.
Totally. And, you know, I got to always acknowledge my my colleagues over in Egypt and the United Arab Emirates. Without the collaboration with them, the work that I'm doing wouldn't be possible. And it shocks me that I get to be part of this, but it also disturbs me that some chiropractors get upset that I'm working with PT, PhDs. And the issue is improving human health and well-being and not what my degree is. And I just, you know, this wasn't really your question, but I'm just speaking off the top of my head that,
yeah.
You know, you've got healthcare providers around the world that are now interested in this topic, and it doesn't matter what their degree is in. It just matters what their intent and what their heart is and how, you know, what quality, you know, of work that we put out together. And honestly, the work that we're doing, I think, will go down in history as changing and supporting the chiropractic correction philosophy when we look at subluxation nerve interference. Shout out to my team over there, Professor Ibrahim Mustafa and Professor Aliyah Diab and the whole team that I'm working with.
Yes, and I think what they're all doing, you and your team here and abroad, is vital to chiropractic. With that, that area of the central nerve system and subluxation and the adjustment, so often people, and I know you see this and I see it, people want to define subluxation as a stuck joint or popping of a joint. And limit our research and effectiveness to that, like you said, low back pain or some symptomatic relief, as compared to this impacting the whole being, the whole body, the person's whole life. What do you think are some of the most compelling research areas that has shown that subluxation and the adjustment affects the whole body and the whole person?
Yeah, and you know, your first point is the problem with subluxation is the definitions. And in the academic realm, they've decided to define vertebral subluxation as a fixated joint that's not working through its range of motion properly. So it's an adhesed joint. It's a hypomobile joint. It's not really a hypermobile joint because spine manipulation doesn't, you know, effectively address that component, you know, classically. And there's two things. Number one, that's a valid model, but it's a model. It's not the only thing that's out there. That's what I get frustrated about. People go, well, that's not a valid model, what we're talking about. I'm like, no, it is. It's not your model. And so first and foremost, we need to define what vertebral subluxation is from a working perspective. So we have to have validity and then reliability of the measurements. And we present that as an academic framework to then begin investigations. So the problem with the manipulable lesion model is, yeah, it's short term. It's 8 to 12 visits, and it improves people 40 to 45%. And then there you go. And that's what the guidelines are going to have us adhere to. Whereas my group and also your group, Danny, we've defined it in different ways. My group has defined it from a true structural starting point for the frame of the spine and the human posture. And we say these are our working models of what normal is and what average values are. And then we say these are the actual categories of displacements that can occur. We define them. We show that they're valid in the literature. We come up with ways to measure and assess those. And then, only then, can we start the idea of interventional studies. Like, if I don't know what in the hell I'm trying to identify and measure and correct in somebody, how can I begin an interventional trial and say, this intervention changes it, and it takes this many visits, and then here's the outcomes. So the perspective is, the model that you choose dictates the path of research that you're going to do. So for me, you know, just to take one example, and this is not the only example, forward head posture. Now, we're not the only group that said that anterior head translation or forward head posture is a bad problem, a type of subluxation. But my father was probably one of the first back in the 1980s to say, forward head posture is a mechanical type of spine displacement that we'll call subluxation in chiropractic. And nowadays, we know what the limits of that are. We know once somebody's head becomes 20 millimeters forward, it starts to cause mild impairments. When it goes 25 millimeters forward, it starts to cause more like moderate impairments. And now, 100% the surgical data is clear, saying that anterior head translation on x-ray, C2 to C7, that exceeds 40 millimeters is associated with severe pain and disability and future lifelong problems. And so now we have, here's a model, here's its limits, here's how we measure it. Now let's intervene. And my group on the non-surgical side, we just published a paper. And Danny, I'm going to go on for a minute or two and then
interject.
We just published a paper on this anterior head translation in the journal Gait and Posture, and it just came out in January. And Gait and Posture is one of the top journals in the world in this category. It's got a high impact factor, and we identified that for each amount that your head goes forward, it causes disturbances in sensory motor control, right? Which is, you know, movement, balance, perception, ocular motor control. And we also showed that it affected the autonomic nervous system. So for each incremental amount that your head goes forward in an anterior manner and you're stuck like that, it screws up your neurophysiology and the ability of your sensory system to communicate to your motor system. And, you know, then what we do is we have to come up with methods of reducing this and seeing, hey, when I reduce anterior head translation, do these same variables improve? And the good news is we have another trial on that nobody's seen yet, but it'll come out later this year showing that when we correct the neck curve and anterior head posture, that there is in fact a linear improvement in the autonomic nervous system and the sensory motor control system. And this is just one example of how important subluxation is, how important your definition is, how important research is to test these ideas, right?
And yeah, so absolutely.
I hope that was one of your questions.
No, I appreciate it. Absolutely. I think this is the kind of stuff that sadly students don't learn about in school per se, and people don't talk about relative to practice. And it impacts the lives of the people that we take care of. And people don't necessarily have enough working knowledge of research. And this is why we do this podcast, and I'm glad to have you on it. And so with that, the anterior head syndrome, the anterior translation, something about that that I think that's vital that I know you could help the audience with is this, how that affects not just the neck, but the lower spine. Like, how does anterior translation then impact the lumbar spine?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have two ways to answer that. The first one is the study we just did in the journal Gait and Posture. As part of the assessment, we put people on a dynamic balance platform. And so they're standing on a platform, and the platform can shift you left and right, forward and back, and it can shift you obliquely. And it can do it at different intensities. So I can do it, you know, at a mild, you know, force. I can do it moderate, and then I can really hit you and really jar you. And what it does, it's a balanced platform. So it looks at your center of gravity and how that center of gravity moves around from mid stance. Well, what we found was people with forward head posture, the greater that forward head posture, the more discrepancy in the sway or the more magnitude in the sway of the center of gravity, and more likely it would be off to one side. So if you're walking around with anterior head translation and something happens in the environment, somebody nudges you as they're walking by, or you step on something that you didn't see and it's a little trip, well, your motor control is not going to really tightly control that center of gravity. The center of gravity is going to sway way outside of normal. Now your back muscles and your hip muscles, and, you know, they have to contract excessively and try to support your system. Now you're going to be at high injury. So that's the idea of sensory motor control, how the neck affects the back. The other issue is starting as early as 2003, my team modeled what forward head postures do to muscle loads and disc loads in the low back. In fact, we published a paper in the Spine Journal in 2005 that showed when your head goes forward and your upper thoracics round and go forward, that that will increase the mechanical load on the lumbar muscles, and then it will increase the load on the disc. And you can just verify that. I mean, just you sit up straight in good posture with your ear over your shoulder, and you take your thumbs and you stick them in your lumbar erector spinae muscles and poke them in there and feel the tension in them, and then just stick your head forward and feel what happens with the, you know, the tension or the effort that is occurring in the lumbar extensor muscles. And what you'll find is anterior head translation linearly increases the effort in the low back.
Right.
And so, you know, the neck intimately affects the back. And in fact, there's a surgical study that came out in the Journal of Neurosurgery Spine that came out, and the title of the paper was How the Neck Affects the Back. And then you've got these crazy chiropractic academics that their sole purpose is to deny and dismiss, you know, corrective chiropractic. That's their sole agenda.
Right, right.
Whoever they're working for, I don't even want to talk about, but their agenda on Facebook, their agenda with insurance guidelines is to say, no, the neck cannot affect the back, and the alignment of your body has no impact on health and well-being. And you're just like, you people are so obvious. You're like transparent. And I don't even debate these people anymore, Danny. I just block them. Because
yeah.
Anybody that gives them a voice is just as stupid and asinine as they are. I mean,
yeah.
These people obviously have an agenda to ruin healthcare. Right?
And I am with you 1,000%. I feel the same with you on that. And what's so frustrating is when I see that the norm, sadly, in a lot of chiropractic is, there's pain in the low back, go, I won't even call it an adjustment, manipulate in some way the low back. Like, that tends to be the educational norm versus what's going on with the whole system.
That's right.
And there are multiple approaches that look at a whole system part of the spine. You have one, I have one, there's others, but versus what's going on with the whole neurospinal system, and is that somehow affecting the low back, you know, and affecting the body. And so to that, what can you say relative to your approach and your research relative to chasing the symptom versus, well, let's correct the spine?
Yeah, my work is, you know, with my team, and I say mine, it's you know, for everybody out there, you got to realize I'm the spokesperson, and as the spokesperson, you unfortunately, you get to be in the limelight, but it's not all about me. I'm the tip of the spear, right? And I've got a sharp edge all around me, and I've got somebody pushing and making sure that I'm going in the right direction. So,
right.
I say mine, but it's my team, my group, everybody
yes.
around me. We did another randomized trial that we actually won an award for. Believe it or not, the first award that we've ever won for CBP style or corrective care style of work was in 2015. We won the European Chiropractic Union Best Randomized Trial Award from the work that my colleagues and I did out of Egypt. And this was led by Ibrahim Mustafa and Aliyah Diab and myself. And basically what we did is we showed when you correct the neck curve, that it has a linear effect on improving low back pain and disability and leg neurophysiology measurement with the H reflex. And this was an 80 participant randomized trial with a 6-month follow up. And we showed, you know, the neck correction is absolutely improving low back pain and disability. And so this says to us that we have to have a system approach. It has to be a full spine approach. And you actually have to correct something to get better long-term results. If you don't, you're just doing short-term, short-sighted work. And what happens, we all know, you know, the chiropractic studies out there are great from one perspective. They say, hey, we are helping people with our work. But when you do long-term follow-ups on the data with no care, so no supportive care, no maintenance care, these people start to get bad again.
Right.
And it's because, A, they didn't solve a mechanical problem to begin with. You don't even know if they did because they didn't define it or look at it. And they just did temporary manipulation, you know, 8 to 12 visits, and they go, oh, people get 40 to 50% better, and and then they need maintenance, you know, one or two times a month because their back pain and disability will come back again. And if you don't take a system approach and look at the whole body as an entity, instead of just looking at, oh, I hurt here, that's where my intervention will be, I think that's extremely short-sighted. And that's why low, to me, and you know, this is hard to prove, but to me, this is why low back pain is still a worldwide problem. Yeah, there's a psychosocial component to it for sure. And there's, you know, exercise and dietary components, but the big component is we're not truly correcting the altered biomechanics of the spine.
Right. And I have to say what you said about a systems approach, that's what I lecture about all the time. And you have to, otherwise, and so I teach in my office, otherwise you're doing Band-Aid care. And that does not help the public long term, right? It doesn't help change the world either, in terms of what they see for healthcare. And that's like what you see with the WFC, and I know you don't want to get started on that.
Well, I've got a few comments.
So with that, what's exciting and next for the research team that you are leading?
Yeah, thank you for asking. And I'm going to float my own boat just for a second. And again, it's a team. I've actually done 172 peer-reviewed publications.
I got to update my numbers.
Yeah, and it's hard to keep up with us, man. We're like, and so in whatever, it's not all in PubMed, but chiropractic journals, et cetera. So I have 172 citations that I have with my name on them as a co-author in the peer-reviewed literature. I just found that out the other night because I had to update my scientific profiles on this thing called ResearchGate, and I'm trying to organize files for a diplomate program I'm doing. So I had to, you know, sit down and go, okay, where are all my papers? So it even shocked me, Danny. But what we're doing collectively as an organization, our CBP nonprofit, with all the researchers that work under our realm, we have about 250 peer-reviewed publications or citations now. And the newest things that we're doing are, you know, these randomized trials. Excuse me. At next month over in Australia, there's a research conference called Spine Week. And Spine Week is really an international run event for a bunch of different societies, surgical, neurosurgical, rehabilitation with scoliosis, and chiropractors get to participate in this for the first time. The Chiropractic Association of Australia is actually one of the members or organization members of Spine Week in Australia next month, which is a huge deal. And some of my good colleagues are helping to run this. Dr. Chris Kaloka is a organizational member, and Dr. Jeb McAveeny is an organizational member for the Scoliosis Society. And I bring this up because my group, we've submitted several projects, new projects, to Spine Week, two randomized trials and one systematic literature review, and we'll be presenting those over in Australia as part of the different societies. Probably the two most interesting ones are, we did a randomized trial with my colleagues over in Egypt again, Professor Mustafa and Professor Diab and myself, and we tested whether or not when we changed the thoracic kyphosis with, you know, rehabilitation strategies, including extension traction, do we improve, A, the thoracic kyphosis, because we never did an investigation to say, can we change that? And then B, does that improve pain and disability and sensory motor control? And without, you know, given too much data or detail, we found out that we can change the thoracic kyphosis almost 20 degrees in the randomized trial, which is huge. And then it improves neck pain, disability, and sensory motor control in the candidates that fit our inclusion criteria. So that's one of our new randomized trials. Huge. I also just presented that at the big PT conference a couple weeks ago in Denver, Colorado. There was 18,000 PTs and students and researchers there. Wow. And I presented our randomized trial on behalf of our research team. So that thoracic kyphosis trial has been at already one peer-reviewed conference, and it will be at another one. And then the other one we did, I kind of already alluded to, when we correct the neck curve and correct head translation, does that improve neck pain, disability, sensory motor control, and autonomic nervous system function? And we identified that, yeah, in the candidates that we included in our trial that met our inclusion criteria, when you correct the neck curve and the alignment, we are improving more than neck pain and disability. We're improving neurophysiology and sensory motor control, which, you know, the naysayers are always going to naysay. They're going to go, oh, well, sensory motor control doesn't matter. Okay, well, tell that to an athlete, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, tell that to a superstar athlete that their efficiency of their sensory motor system doesn't matter, right? It's
right.
Like, it's just, what a joke, right? But those are some of the new things we're working on. We're just killing it, and we're killing it because we're tired of what we see in the percentage that's trying to drive the profession to a pain only based model,
right?
And a short term, you know, just give me my 8 visits under insurance care, and then everything else is, you know, not evidence based, right?
Right. Like, no, I know, and it's a point of pain and frustration for me, and you know, grateful for I'm for one will certainly go on record over and over again. I'm grateful for the work you and your team do. Because I know it's vital to the future of profession, as well as something that, hey, all of us need to step up more. It can't just be your team per se, right? We need multiple teams around the world doing this, and you guys have a shining example of that. And I think hats off to you, and much gratitude is owed for much of the profession to your team for that. In the future of chiropractic. And I will say, we were very grateful to have you present at Mile High last year. It was great to have you there. And it was also great to have you on the science summit that we did last year. So we're grateful for your contribution. People loved your presentation. And I will say, and I'll toot my own horn on this, that I was very grateful when, you know, you had said back to me, hey, you should be very proud of what you made here at Mile High. So I thank you for that.
You're welcome, Danny.
And I
sincerely mean that, because, you know, you have a vision, and you found your purpose and your passion, and you're trying to do the right thing to, you know, to support this, and not from a, you know, a personal financial gain. You're trying to improve the profession that we all love and that we have. And it's really cool when you bring in people that are different than what you might personally do in your practice, but you want to expose your members and expose other, you know, healthcare providers to other things that are out there. And that's always, to me, that's always admirable and commendable, because it's about improving patient outcomes. That's what it's about.
Right. Thank you for saying that. And that's exactly how I see it. And my thought is that in chiropractic, you know, we're all in this together to improve chiropractic and, more importantly, improve patient care. We want people to get best results, and people need to get exposed to what they don't get exposed to, unfortunately, in chiropractic school. Right. And I know that they don't get enough CBP for exposure in chiropractic school, sadly, well as many other things they aren't exposed in schools, which we would like to see differently.
Yeah. And this is, there's two things I want to say before we, you know, close this. I always like to be around people that are positive and, you know, have a positive example, even if that example is a little bit different than my approach. it's a positive example. It's working together for the betterment of chiropractic and healthcare. There's so much negativity out there. You wouldn't believe the stuff. I have as many people that hate my work as that love my work. And a lot of times the people that hate my work have never even really looked into it. They just heard from somebody else that's totally against CBP because they've heard from somebody else or some professor at a chiropractic college said something negative. And, you know, I get this, oh, well, Deeds work and CBP's work. It's all just self-promoting.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with healthcare. It's only for a financial incentive. I'm all like, oh, my God, you know. Like,
I know. And those are the kinds of things that just completely frustrate me.
So. You got to stay away from that and, you know, just block them. And what I said to one woman, because it was an important post, I usually don't engage, but hundreds of people were seeing this, and it was about anti-X-ray issues in chiropractic. And so finally at the end of it, she just said, well, I'll listen to my professors at school, and I won't listen to you. And I said, well, what I'll do then is I'll just keep publishing, and I'll make sure that your professors are either obsolete in their understanding or they have to reference my work properly. That's what I'll keep doing. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
it's
the craziest thing out there. So I love being around, you know, the positive type of uplifting conversations and directions that we're all trying to move, you know, our unique systems towards and again, improving patient outcomes.
You know, I wake up each day and one of the things that I have as an agenda is, can I leave chiropractic profession in some way better than I found it? You know, so I think we all need to do that to some, whatever degree we can in our own gifting. So, you know, because our gifting's different. So I appreciate you. So I thank you for being on the podcast. How can people, I know you have to run, how can people learn more about CBP? Where should they go?
I'd love them to, you know, take a look at what we have. You can go to idealspine.com. That's our main website. And, you know, I'd love to have you at seminars and using the work and things like that. But also, I've got a great YouTube channel that has a lot of videos up there on different research ideas that we've done, different interventions for cases. And just go to Chiropractic Biophysics YouTube and find our YouTube channel, and you can see like 80 to 100 videos that are open access.
Well, and this is the kind of thing that people need to see more, and then they can talk to their professors at school, right? Yep.
Amen.
So that being said, thank you for being on the Mile High Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please, as I said, hit subscribe so you never miss a week of Mile High Chiropractic. We look forward to seeing all of you in August, August 20th to 23rd. You can find out all the details at milehighchiroregistration.com and keep changing spines and lives and minds with chiropractic. Thank you, Dr. Deed.
Hey, thank you, Danny, and everybody out there. Really appreciate the time.